Hey everybody, this is Johnny. Just a quick intro for this kind of special episode. It's not really new content, but it's an alternate take on the audio from our PAX East Tridux Edition panel. I know a lot of people had trouble understanding some of the stuff that was on the original version that we posted. That was from the mixer board that the PAX East Enforcers provided to us, and I want to thank them again for doing that. It made our lives a lot easier. But there was some kind of machine noise, some interference in that file that I had to try to clean up, or else you wouldn't have been able to listen to it at all, and that left the file sounding kind of overly processed and a little bit strange. And there were definitely some parts where it was so quiet that it was hard to hear. So, of course, you might know that Jared Rosenberg was videoing the entire panel, and the video of that is on the website now. If you go to the article for this sort of episode of the show for the panel, you'll find the video embedded there, and it's really cool to check out. And we got some comments from people saying that the audio in his video is actually better than the one we posted on the feed for subscribers. So I asked Jared if he could extract the audio from his video file and provide that to me, and I could post it as sort of an alternate take. So this is here it is, and if you had trouble listening to it before, trouble understanding it, or if it just hurt your ears or whatever, I figured this version has its own problems maybe, but overall it might be a little bit easier to listen to. It's definitely less processed, and you might prefer this. So if you couldn't make it through the whole thing before, maybe this will help. Again, there's nothing new here. It's exactly the same content as before, but it's a different mix. Jared recorded it from the audience, and so you'll hear this more from what the audience at the panel actually heard themselves, which again, it's not perfect, but it might be better than what we had before. So I hope you'll appreciate it, and look out for a brand new normal podcast episode of Radio Free Nintendo in just a couple of days.
Let's kick it off, guys. Hello and welcome to Radio Free Nintendo Panel Edition Tridux. Coming. I'm your host, Jonathan Metz, and with me, as always, James Jones.
Hello.
John Lindemann.
I must object to that affair. I'm nobody's uncle in this room.
Creepy, yes. Uncle, no.
And over here, we have a very special guest, Guillaume Mayette from Negative World.
I don't know about how special I am.
You're very special.
Very.
Extra,
you're
extra
the man.
Special.
Yes. Very.
I have a question. How many in our audience are subscribers to the RFN podcast? All right.
Welcome.
That's excellent. So we have some newbies as well. And how many people were at our NWR Connectivity Jeopardy panel yesterday morning?
Yeah.
Awesome. It was really great. I want to congratulate those guys. They did a fantastic job. It was their first panel ever. It was really, really nice. So thank you all for coming, and I hope we're going to have a really fun hour here talking about Nintendo. If you didn't come to hear about Nintendo, you should leave. That's what we do. And just a quick history for our podcast, for those of you who aren't familiar, we've been doing this for almost 6 years. We're coming up on our 300th anniversary, our 300th episode.
Just John.
We're actually immortal.
Yeah. Assassin's Creed 3 actually ends, and George Washington listens to our podcast. I know we're coming up on our 300th episode this summer, and I hope you will subscribe and listen to that. It's going to be a big production, as it always is when we do these anniversary episodes. This is our third year at PAX East, our third panel, and we're really excited to be back. We love doing this, and you know, we do the show over Skype normally, so it's always special for us to even be in the same room doing a show together. It's even more special to have an all live audience and actually, you know, get to look at you guys while we do it. So another thing I want to note is a huge part of our show is listener interaction and questions, question and answer. So we're going to devote about half the panel to that. So while we're going to start out with a feature discussion and talk about some Wii U stuff, because I think not enough people are talking about Wii U in the world of gaming right now, and that is our specialty. While we do that, I hope that while you're doing your street pass checks and everything else, I hope you'll be thinking about questions, and we can talk about maybe the feature discussion will give you an idea, or maybe you want to talk about 3DS or retro games or anything you want, but we'll be happy to. And so we'll take Q&A, and we'll devote about half the panel to that. And we'll try to get really in depth with your questions, as always. So to kick things off.
Can I do it first before we start?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I have a surprise. Not for John. John's already seen it because I suck at keeping secrets. But I have a surprise. So apparently there's such a thing as a Lego store that I've now learned. Boston. have made us. Well, unfortunately, Greg can't be with us today. I had no chance to make one for Guillaume, so Guillaume holds Greg for the time being. But I have made unopenable Legos for us, apparently.
James didn't think he had to open the blister pack.
It's fine. I closed the blister pack. I can open it. There we go. So
these are sweet. These are custom Lego figures.
There you go, Johnny.
That's amazing.
It's your magic cup.
It's actually a pimp cup, Johnny. The character's holding a pimp cup. Yes.
John's from the streets.
So, yeah, okay.
And I'm whatever the hell Carly made for me. I have no idea.
Down here with a dollar sign on it, of course. Right. Why am I in chains, James? Just too street, you say.
Just too street.
That was years ago. Those charges. And what is this for Guillaume?
Unfortunately, I didn't have a chance to make one for Guillaume, but that was Greg's.
Oh, this is Greg. Okay.
He's going to chop everything.
Like, that's fantastic. Greg is holding an axe. That's the axe that he uses whenever him and Modus come up on the show. Yes. You will never hear that shit, ever. That's our little secret.
True story.
All right. That's awesome. Thanks, James. My very own Lego. I also want to know, we printed out some t-shirts. We just, our very first RFN t-shirt went on sale this week, and I had 10 of them printed and sent to John's house. We were going to bring them and give them out as prizes for people to ask awesome questions, and we forgot them.
They do exist, though. We'll say that.
They're in a box at his apartment. So we're going to bring them tomorrow, and if you find us tomorrow, please stop us, and we will give you a shirt.
If anything, we just want to prove that they actually do exist.
No, they're really great.
And they've got faces on them.
Yeah, and if you want one, go to our site. You can see how to order one. They're pretty cool, but unfortunately we forgot them today. So tomorrow you'll get one. All right. So for the feature discussion, I thought let's follow up on what we did last year for our panel. Last year we talked about Wii U or BHD as we called it back then. Super Wii. I still think that's a better name. And they may very well change the name. Okay. There's some indications that might happen. But last year was before all the rumors hit, so we really didn't know anything about it. We just kind of knew based on, reading the tea leaves and the way the industry was going, we knew that the console would be announced soon, and so we wanted to kind of get out ahead of it. Now, the system was shown to the public, or whatever version of the public goes to E3 about 10 months ago. We've played it, some of us have played it, and yet it still feels like there's a lot of unknowns about the system. It's coming out probably in about 6 or 7 months from now. And there's still a lot that we don't know, and Nintendo has been very quiet about it for a long time. No big surprise there, but also a lot of other people have been really quiet about it. People don't know what to say, people are afraid to speculate, or they just, Nintendo is such a wild card. A lot of people aren't very good at speculating about what Nintendo's going to do. So I thought, first off, I wanted to read some comments from last year in case you weren't at the panel, because I thought some of these were funny. James said that they can't come out with something that looks the same.
Technically speaking, I'm correct. It half looks the same.
Yeah, they tried to do something that looks the same. I think they see the error of their ways now. So the Wii U is going to be redesigned the next time we see it to some extent. The console itself, maybe the tablet, maybe the name, maybe the branding, or the way that they're going to approach it. But it will be different because the first time I think it was confusing, to say the least. Some people thought it was some kind of expansion or just a new controller for the Wii. It's definitely not. John said they need to drop friend codes. And this was before 3DS came out. We still didn't know that that soon. We knew.
Yeah, we knew.
Friend codes?
Universal friend code, yeah.
But I think having the 3DS having been out for a year now, we have gotten used to the idea of these universal friend codes, and it's very easy to forget about them because you put them in once, you never have to deal with them again. So John, I wanted to follow up with you. Do you still think Nintendo has to avoid using friend codes, or can they get away, if they do it as well as they have with 3DS and make it as painless as that, is that okay?
Well, no, I think the console experience is different. I don't really mind having a friend code for my portable because it's kind of more of a person-to-person sort of device. But with a console, it's kind of like you're in there for the long haul,
You're in their room.
Well, that's the thing, especially
while they sleep.
With Xbox Live out there.
Syncing their private data.
PSN out there, Steam out there. I mean, it's just time to need. Consolidated account that you just have.
What if you could just import your friends from your 3DS?
That would be cool. Yeah. But I don't think that it would justify having a friend code for your console. I think it would be neat.
Yeah. Okay.
couple that with the publisher saying that Nintendo is going to let us do pretty much whatever we want with their network, you know, do you fear that perhaps we're going to have to have a GameSpy account, a Steam account, Origin account, and, you know, like already with Monster Hunter, you have different friend codes. So perhaps like the friend codes would have been a good thing, like a unified one for the 3DS.
Well, I mean, I think that they have to look at, you know, what's out there now. I think that things are friendly enough on other consoles. Because Nintendo, they want to make things simple. They want to make things, excuse me, family friendly. And I think that, you know, Xbox Live and PSN, they've done that. Kind of shown that you can kind of, you know, marry the...
If you have a mute button, yes.
Yes. But see, there are controls like that. So people can, you know, kind of tailor their experience to whatever they want to expose their family
mute
to.
All. That's my tailoring.
And you know, I just kind of want to point out that I already have an EA Origin account on my Xbox. I already have a Steam account on my PS3. So although I'm not necessarily happy about it, I think there's already precedent for having those multiple publisher-specific accounts on your console. And I don't think Nintendo's really going to care about trying to prevent that from happening again. So I think Wii U probably will have that stuff. In addition to probably the universal friend code for your system, I wouldn't be surprised if you see that.
Yeah, if they tier it,
and then finally, a comment I made last year on our panel is that Nintendo should or could bring the touchscreen experience to a console, and everyone laughed at me. What do you know? So let's move into kind of the countdown. I kind of titled this feature the countdown to Wii U, because it is coming a lot sooner than we think, and we don't probably think about it every day because you don't see it every day, you don't hear other people talking about it every day, but it really is coming out very soon, and I think once E3 hits, it's going to be just, you know, blast in your face of, wow, this thing is real, there are actual games for it, we're really going to be playing it very soon. So I'm going to kind of get out ahead of that once again and talk about, you know, what is the reality of Wii U and what's it going to mean to us. I think let's start out in a really positive sense and say, and you know, ask the panel here, start with James. What's the one confirmed fact about Wii U? Not speculate at all, but just based on what we do actually know, what's the one thing that has you the most excited about the system?
What do we know about the system? I mean, right now it's still pretty amorphous. That was only half a joke. But I mean, yeah, the tablet has a lot of potential things they can do with it. We sat in that round table with Ubisoft developers, they're talking about all these things that they think they can do with the tablet that sound great, but we've not actually seen any of them. I mean, they were just things that some guy said. It's like, okay, it sounds awesome. He's like, we can tell you when someone's online and wants to play with you on your tablet, great. When can we see that? So right now it's kind of like the potential that this thing has beyond just the ability to tap while you play games. I haven't seen anything yet, so it could be an utter disappointment.
Yeah, and I think, you know, based on the reaction that the Wii is getting, especially with the rear touch, which I think is probably the most similar thing to the Wii U, just in the sense that you could be playing a game and also using a touch screen at the same time and not necessarily looking at the screen that you're touching, it hasn't gone over all that well on the Vita from the reaction that people are getting, and developers still seem to not be really sure how to use it yet. And I think it'll be really interesting to see if Nintendo can come up with better ideas or developers, but you can come up with better ideas for using that kind of interface.
I mean, for me, aside from the network stuff, the unified account, it looks like a unified account. I'm just glad that it's going to be 1080p, and devs will no longer have the kind of excuse like we don't want to download our stuff to a Nintendo platform. They'll be able to they'll be able to create a game on a PS3, 360, and pretty much bring it across right to Wii U.
Removing barriers.
Exactly. Yeah, it removes a huge barrier. So you're going to definitely see a lot more third-party support because of that, just because from a monetary standpoint, it's much easier for them to just port something across all the platforms. So that's
But at the same time, it's removing a disadvantage for Nintendo's platform. It's not necessarily giving them an advantage over the other platforms. It just kind of brings them up to equal footing.
Yep.
I think it's up to Nintendo to kind of push it one step farther than that and say, tell developers why they want to make the Wii U version different or better than the other versions, rather than just the same would be a pretty big improvement over what we've had in the previous generation, but I don't think it's enough.
enough to make them a success?
Well, the strength that it brings to the table is the fact that, you know, you'll have Nintendo fans buying the console, but also people that are kind of, could either go either way. They can maybe go to Microsoft or Sony. Now, if they like a Nintendo game, they can say, well, hey, they'll probably also get all these ports from all these other consoles. So,
right.
It'll be a big win for Nintendo.
You know, what has you the most excited?
Whatever technology that's in the tablet that makes it, like at E3, the game that made it really made a big impression on me was Shield Pose, and really like the way that you track your movement, and you would just see like basically a second window into the game's world. I don't know if like that's actually practical. I don't know if what was cool at E3 is going to be fun in my living room.
Yeah, that's a very big difference.
Yeah, yeah. But no, that was like, that felt really great at the time. Yeah. And I can't wait to see what ideas developers, especially Nintendo, have for it.
And Shield Pose is a demo that was in E3 that's made by, I think, the guys who do Rhythm Heaven, and it was very much that kind of experience. So it's very rhythm based, and I think the interesting thing about what you're talking about, it's almost like augmented reality, the 3DS, but I think it has the potential to be a lot more than that, because augmented reality relies on the camera primarily, and so you're, for one thing, 3DS cameras are not very good, right? It's very low resolution and doesn't have its own light. So it very heavily depends on the lighting of your room, which is a lot of times maybe not as good as the camera wants. The other thing is, they're taking game elements and imposing those on top of the camera feed, which can look a little jarring because the quality is so different between the two. I think what you're talking about, it's not augmented reality. It feels very similar to that, but the difference is that the tablet itself doesn't have a camera on the back and doesn't need to. So it's only showing you the game world when you look at the screen. So it's moving, it's more immersive, I think, because it's not trying to do this weird combining of the real world and the fantasy world. It's putting you into the fantasy world, and you only see that, there's nothing to distract you from it.
Yeah, and it was actually like holding the second window into the game's world. Like, it was extremely precise, no lag, and it was very smooth, and it felt great.
Yeah, that is really exciting, I think. It'll be interesting to see, you know, if you can take that beyond a mini game and actually develop a really robust game idea around it.
Well, I think everyone thought at the time, like Metroid Prime, the different visors, like it's just amazing.
Yeah, being able to scan stuff with it.
Yeah. Okay, for me personally, I think the most exciting thing for me has nothing to do with the controller, and it's the tech that's in the box itself. We didn't see a lot of this at E3. It was really kind of only hinted at in a couple of video demos, like the Zelda thing. Most of the demos seem to have been built on original architecture. Use very simple graphics. You know, they're kind of like Wii Sports or Wii Play or something like that. It's just a more proof concept. They're really focusing on the controller. But I think a really key thing about Wii U, the hardware itself, is that it is much more powerful. It is modern hardware. It is going to output HD graphics, which a lot of people don't even know that yet. I saw some time ago, I think it was a description from Weekend Confirmed a couple weeks ago. In the description, it's, you know, they said they were going to talk about Wii U, and they actually said, we don't know if it's going to do HD graphics. I was like, yeah, we do. We saw it at E3. But that message didn't get across even to people who you would think would be paying attention.
Saw it with their eyes.
Yeah, so the messaging has been confusing, to say the least, so far about Wii U, and it's been silent for the past 6 months or so. But if you think about it, and I'm not trying to disparage the Wii, because it obviously did a lot of cool stuff, and there's many fantastic games on the system, but in terms of hardware specs, it's really not a big upgrade over GameCube, and the additional power that it did have over GameCube a lot of times was used to do things like motion controls or online play, etc., or just to make things smoother. So if you think about it, Wii U is the first time in about 11 years that we've had new graphics technology for these games, and seeing these classic franchises like Mario and Zelda and Metroid, F-Zero, you know, whatever, I can name 20 of them, but seeing these in HD for the first time, and seeing them not only in higher resolution, which is nice on modern TVs, but seeing them with just so much more, you know, exponential graphic power, and they basically skipped a generation in graphics technology. So the games that we're going to see for Wii U that really take advantage of the hardware are going to look light years beyond what we saw in the Wii generation.
Yeah, the Wii was curious, because people seem to think that Nintendo can't do HD graphics, or they don't know how to do it, or something like that. I hate to say that it gave Nintendo a bad name in that sense, but it lowered, I mean, people just don't expect Nintendo to do these big graphical, you know, these high production value games necessarily. Production value, probably the wrong term, because it's kind of a loaded term, but
I mean, Nintendo can certainly do all of that stuff, so.
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing, it's kind of a little known fact, but Nintendo produces a lot of their art assets in HD and then downscales them for the Wii. So and it's why, you know, if you see like the Dolphin emulators online, they can actually run these games in their in a higher resolution using the original assets, and it would look fantastic. They've been doing that for a long time. So I think in terms of like development costs, it's not going to be a huge addition for Nintendo to start making HD games. I think they kind of already make HD games. They just can't really output them, you know, and that's unfortunate. So I think it's really good for them. It's also an interesting time for them to be introducing a new console, because they're going to be picking up a lot of games and series and ports from other systems that are already being developed for HD. So it's also, a lot of the reason that Wii was developed the way it was from a hardware standpoint is that they wanted to keep development costs low. And I think now, even though they're jumping to HD and a much more powerful system, because they've kind of let other people blaze that trail for them, they're not asking developers to do anything they haven't really done before in terms of cost, which is really good for them. And that kind of leads me into the next question I wanted to ask you guys, which is, you know, we all know this in the room, had issues with third-party support. There seemed to be a lot of it up front, a lot of it faded after the first couple of years, and the third-party games that we still get now, a lot of them are not very high quality, or they're not really things that we would be interested in. Whereas these other systems, PS3 and Xbox, have been out just as long, or if not longer, and they're still getting a lot of really heavy, really creative output from third parties. So, you know, for me, the question is not, will there be third party support for the launch for the first year? Because I think there definitely will be. I think Nintendo's good at getting developers excited, and you know, the other qualities of the system mean that it's going to be easy for people to bring over things like, you know, Aliens, Colonial Marines, and Darksiders 2, and, you know, Batman Arkham City. I don't know why you would wait a year to play Batman Arkham City, but, you know, they're going to put it out there. But I think the question is, let's say 3 or 4 years down the line, what is Nintendo doing now to make sure the third parties stick around for that long and continue to support it so that we don't have this long, slow decline of the generation that we've had the past couple of consoles? Jamie? It's an easy question.
Yeah.
This is not a quiz.
Are we sure? I would hope that they're being forward with interacting with the development studios right now. And that's more than just getting them dev kits really in advance. That's really making sure they have the most robust documentation they can have, they have contact at all times, that they're constantly following up with these people, and that to a certain extent they're selling hardware as a viable platform for their software. And that's a little bit PR-ish. With technology support there, but really, to an extent, I don't know what Nintendo themselves are inclined to do on that front. I mean, they can pay for some exclusives, they do that occasionally, but really, to an extent, this has to be the developers making the decisions. So all Nintendo can really do is grease the wheels and make sure it's as easy as possible for them to continue to support. Ultimately, it's going to be a market viability thing that makes the decision for the other publishers.
Well, I think there's no question that EA, Ubisoft, and Activision are going to support it like it's more. I think that the Wii and the 3DS still haven't dispelled the belief amongst publishers that only Nintendo makes money on Nintendo systems. So I don't know what Nintendo exactly can do to, you know, help them out. Maybe lower their royalties or something like that. Perhaps also more things like they've done with Dragon Quest, publishing the games themselves. They've been really slow to add those Nintendo codes to third-party games. Right now they're doing it, but like perhaps those initiatives like include the other publishers in them and stop hogging all the publicity and all the marketing.
Yeah, I mean, I was surprised when I started buying some third-party 3DS games and they were found a lot of Nintendo codes in there because I'd never seen that before. I don't know if they're doing that on Wii because I haven't bought a third-party Wii game in a really long time. But, you know, maybe they'll continue that with Wii U.
I mean, I'd like to see Nintendo kind of seed some other genres that are popular on other consoles. Like, you know, first-person shooters would be great. That does not have to mean some kind of like bro-fisting sort of Gears of War Halo kind of thing, but something like GoldenEye.
Can you describe bro-fisting for the audience?
Take your fist like this. Connection,
But yeah, something like that. You know, something that's we can rope this afterwards, James. I'll show you how to teach the ropes. But something like GoldenEye, where it has a broad appeal. It's not necessarily some kind of militaristic shooter, anything like that. But you know, some of these genres where you know, that aren't typically a success on or perceived to be, you know, unsuccessful on Nintendo platforms. I'd love to see Nintendo kind of branch out and, you know, maybe do something with one of their existing franchises that could be in these other genres.
Yeah, I mean, Kid Icarus is a great example of a Nintendo franchise that's been revived in really completely unrecognizable form from what it used to be. And I had some initial misgivings about Kid Icarus because of some demos, but I'm really impressed with the final product now that I've gotten to play for myself. And I think it's a great template for Nintendo to revive other classic franchises and not be so slavishly devoted to the gameplay mechanics or the style of the previous games, because you do really get in this kind of diminishing returns of if you're only bringing back the same fans over and over again, there's going to be some loss and attrition of that, so you're getting diminishing returns, this fraction of your audience base coming back every single time. You have to find a way to make these games exciting for people who've never played before, and I think Kid Icarus is a great example of that. I mean, I would imagine a lot of people who are buying Kid Icarus Uprising right now never played the original one. I don't really think you should. So I think they really just kind of cast aside. The great thing is, if you play that game, it actually pays a lot of homage to the original title, more than it deserves, in my opinion. But it's great because if you are a fan of Kid Icarus, it reminds you of these things, and it's certainly not ignoring the fact that the series used to be something different, but it also, in terms of gameplay, you can tell they don't really care about trying to make it feel like the original Kid Icarus. It doesn't at all.
Yeah.
It feels more like an 80s cartoon.
Well, that's the thing. I think Nintendo fans are open to that kind of thing. Sometimes I think that Nintendo underestimates how open fans are to kind of reworking the franchises. I mean, it seems that on the earlier consoles, like on the NES, they were much more willing to rework franchises in kind of daring ways than now. It's, this is the way this franchise is, and this is the way it shall be for the future going forward.
Well, I mean, it's on the NES, it's two games, and it's not really a franchise yet. This is the second game. I mean, they probably didn't feel quite so tied to what they were doing at that point. It wasn't established convention when they made Zelda 2. They did Zelda, and they're like, well, let's do something different this time. We're going to let you jump on roofs and do stuff like that.
But I also think they weren't the cash cows that they are now. That's why they don't want to tinker with the form.
Well, yeah.
Just to finish up the third-party question, my idea on this was kind of that I think with Wii U, they need to try to get third parties to establish new franchises on the system from the start. Not that that's an easy thing to do, but it's so important. If you think about the games that are still coming out now on PS3 and Xbox 360, they're mostly sequels and franchises that have been around since the launch of those platforms. And those series did not launch on Wii. So for instance, Call of Duty, there's 6 Call of Duty games on Xbox 360. There are 3 or 4 on Wii, but they didn't start it there, So that was a series that people didn't already associate with Wii. And so 2 years later, when they finally release a Call of Duty game for Wii, nobody really cares, because if you care about Call of Duty, you're already playing it on another system.
Yeah, they didn't even bother marketing Call of Duty.
Mass Effect is a great example where they've tried to branch it off to PS3 as well. And I think, if you only have a PS3, it's great that you can play that game on your system. But people associate that series with Xbox, and if you started playing it on Xbox 360 4 years ago, you're going to finish playing it on Xbox 360. So what that means is it's kept those platforms alive, because people are always looking out for, well, if nothing else, at least the next game in that series is coming out. There's no next game in a series coming out in a week, and there hasn't been for a long time. So those franchises didn't exist from the start. Nintendo cultivated the Wii platform as a place for publishers to experiment and to try a bunch of mini games and things like that. And some of that stuff was really successful, and some of it was really cool, but they didn't set up these kind of top tier, awesome franchises that would exist on Wii, even if eventually they branched off and ported to other systems. The Wii would be the home of that franchise, and that doesn't really exist, even for Nintendo's own games. They don't typically only release one game in a system, in a series for a given platform. And I don't expect Nintendo to really change their ways on that outside of Galaxy 2. But I think third parties always expect to release 2 or 3 games in a franchise on a given platform. And you need to set up that infrastructure with the Wii software, the Wii U software library from the very beginning. We are almost at 30 minutes, so we're going to start Q&A in just a sec. One last thing. I think, what's the best question I have left here? We ran out of time.
All of them.
Is the close association with Wii that was shown back at E3 as we know it right now, is that a good or a bad thing for Wii U? How do you take advantage of that, and how do you correct it?
Well, if you correct it, it depends really how they want to market it. I mean, if they're going to try to hit that same core demographic that made them a lot of money in the previous iteration, then yeah, it probably is a good thing. The only distinction is you have to make it really clear that this is a new piece of hardware, and that your advertising has to consistently drive that message home. For a while, they were continuing to call this part of the DS family of systems, which is really self-defeating because there's about four other pieces of hardware that are also members of the DS family of systems, and they all do the same thing. And this does pretty much everything else differently. But if they're trying to just make the clean break, I think marketing it might be a little easier without the branding, but mind share is a lot more difficult. Yeah. So it just depends on how they want to, which particular marketing issue they want to tackle. They want to try to gain new mind share, or do they want to try to make sure that the distinction between old and new is clear enough to understand you're going to have to buy a new piece of hardware. You can't just go to the store and buy a screen and suddenly play Measure Up. Also, you bought Measure Up.
Measure Up is the kind of thing that would probably come in the system.
I hope so.
What do you guys think? I mean, this thing, from what we've seen so far, it looks a lot like the Wii. The games look a lot like the Wii, at least in style, and it supports all these Wii controllers. In fact, you kind of have to use Wii controllers because it only supports one tablet. This seems like a really confusing product to sell to people.
To me.
I can't remember the really awkward phrase that Iwata or Reggie used to say, like, now it's inclusive, now it's not just like everyone, it's also for the gamer and everything. I don't think that Nintendo has to worry at all about the more casual gamers who have been still playing their Wii, like they've been buying Just Dance, and they, I think the name still has a good ring to it. Like, they've soured on it, even though right now, like, there's basically no games releasing for it. They really have to bring back the gamers, and I'm pretty insulated of the negative world. Like, people don't really bitch about Nintendo or the Wii, but sometimes when I go outside, like, I hear, like, the Wii, what? Like, you're still playing that? And WiiWare is dead, the VC is dead. Like, they really have to make a big push. I don't think that ports of, Assassin's Creed 3 is going to convince anyone. Make a clean break perhaps with the Wii name, hardcore Kid Icarus game. Realistic, but I have no idea.
That's the thing. I think the Wii is such a huge, quantity that I think it makes no sense to go away from the brand. I mean, I think they took a big risk in it, when they actually named it Wii to start off with, and it paid off for them. So I think that they should go with it. I think they could probably come up with a more elegant name. I think Super Wii is definitely better, even though, there's a lot of, even though it's right for jokes, I think.
It's going on.
I think they should stick with the Wii brand. I think they probably, what they'll run into is people just assuming that they know everything that the Wii brand is all about, trying to kind of break them of that perception. Again, I keep bringing up the word perception, but I feel like there are a lot of perception issues with Nintendo. So,
are you receiving these perception issues?
He's very perceptive.
Yes.
Okay, so let's call it into our feature discussion and start the Q&A. You can line up at this microphone, I believe. Our helpful enforcer is coming over to make sure it works all right here.
All right. I remember this guy from yesterday.
Yes.
I was at the W panel. And so my question is, two questions that I had at the W panel. I'm broken record. Anyway, everyone on all the podcasts say they want to say, oh, here's your Final Fantasy, I want to see me buy a movie here. Now I'll take a stick and spin. What Final Fantasy don't you want to buy? Like, we could all live without alcohol, Am I right? Come on.
I think they should stick to releasing One Harvest Moon at a time. That would probably help a lot of that series.
That's always how one person.
Because
Wrecking Crew, I can do that.
Maybe you can.
Hogan Valley.
I played Hogan Valley yesterday in the retro room. It is
horrible. It's so bad.
But that's not even the worst one. There's the lightsaber one, there's the gunslinger one where you are the detective and you're actually walking. That was
it's a good question. I mean, I think I'm more excited about the franchises that they will bring back. But I'm also excited about the new franchises. You know, I think Nintendo has, they're so slow to introduce new characters and new worlds, and I really want them to do that. I mean, GameCube was the last time we really saw a lot of that stuff. And on Wii, they were still launching new franchises, but they were all kind of under this universal theme slash brand of, you know, the Mii characters, Wii Sports, Wii Party, things like that. And just lacking some character, I think. Lacking the kind of unique personality that a lot of their series do now.
No, but they're unique. I mean,
right.
It's in the name, so it's kind of, see, we've got them to build a franchise. I mean, they're a franchise. It's still going to build a personality around you, because, I mean, Johnson, I'm trying to put that in.
I don't know, man. I don't have all the answers.
Is walking me.
I mean, for me, it's if I had to say one thing I would really like to see them pass on, at least for the time being a 3D Mario game. But since they've already shown it for you, I guess that's out. Since we've had 5 in the last, five years?
Yeah, and I'm not sure that. I feel like that kind of gameplay, I'm glad that they're keeping it alive, for sure, but I feel like it's better suited to handhelds. I'm not sure if they need another console, new Super Mario Brothers.
Not right now.
It does feel a little soon, but you know, maybe that's not a launch game. Maybe that is going to be pushed out for a little while.
Or it's done there.
Maybe it is on time.
Wait, one last question. If you were to get any other piece of prototype game, which one would you want? I would have to be probably
like
Earthbound
64. Well, Earthbound 64 was released in Japan as 1-3.
Dinosaur Planet.
Yeah.
I played Dinosaur Planet.
You did play Dinosaur Planet.
Yeah. It was a lot more fun.
It still is. It's now the handiest Disney Star Fox like Zelda.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Next question.
Hi, guys.
Hey. New listener, actually.
Oh, cool.
Cool. So, my question is, with Wii U, Nintendo seems, well, they said that they're trying to focus back on the core gamers. We saw they kind of did that with Wii and the third parties, you know, providing support like Red Steel 2 and Conduit, but it seems that the core gamers didn't necessarily gravitate towards it. So what do you think Wii U has to do besides just getting the third parties to support it to get back the core gamers and, you know, have them come back to the Nintendo?
I would say the instances of those two games in particular, there was a decisive lack of marketing involved, especially with the Conduit. It had Sega as its push. Sega did some stuff for it, but it wasn't a majorly pushed title. Red Steel 2, it was the second entry in a franchise. The first game in the franchise kind of has this kind of like Red Steel punchline associated with it. It's still got a punchline attached to it, man. It just does. I didn't put it there. And I think that if they're going to do something to really get a third-party franchise going, it may be something like they do in Europe, which is where Nintendo ended up distributing the game. And they handle, to a certain extent, marketing. And they make sure there's a consistent message about the game, that there's awareness on the title, that the media is handled properly, that marketing is handled consistently, that
copies of the game are available to purchase, which is something that's somewhat important when you're trying to sell a game, and that people know how to get it, and know that they want it.
In the end, though, isn't that like Nintendo doing the publisher's job?
It is, yeah.
And sometimes literally in the case of Dragon Quest games.
And they don't necessarily have to do all of that. I mean, they could certainly help coordinate with the publisher to make sure that Nintendo's own channels of communication are sending the same message as the publisher. I mean, it doesn't cost Nintendo much to include the name of a game that's not theirs on one of their press releases that we get.
Or in the back of the box of the console.
Yeah, well, that I have games from the back of my game that never come out, so that's
fine. They have to show that they have to really embrace those kinds of games. I mean, it's a lot of times now when you see that from Nintendo, it kind of comes across as insincere. Like, they'll, you know, like, RE4, oh, it's a great hardcore game. It's like, that's the only game of that type for a console, right? You know, on the horizon. So I think they really have to kind of keep those kinds of games in the forefront. You know, just say, hey, you know, we do all this, you know, family, casual, whatever you want to call it, but we also do all these hardcore, like, have consistent releases.
Talk about them consistent. Make sure that, make sure you can, when one goes out of its sales cycle, that you've already begun planting the seeds for the sales of this, the ones going to follow.
Yeah, and I think with the 3DS library, they've done a good job so far of focusing on a more committed gamer who's going to want to buy a new game every month, someone who's, older than maybe their reputation audiences, and they've done really well with it so far. So I think that's worked out for them. It's worked really well for them in Japan as well. And I would expect them to take that lesson from 3DS and apply it to Wii U. But we'll see at E3 exactly what games that entails. Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thanks.
Some of the new 3DS games that are coming out, like Resident Evil, that weird ghost camera.
Spirit camera, yes.
And especially Kid Icarus. How do you feel that Nintendo seems to be going after these games for the 3DS that aren't portable anymore? I mean, if you try to play Kid Icarus anywhere without a cable, it's practically impossible. So it's kind of the opposite. You may go back to the casual side, because they're still hard.
Spirit Camera takes a book, which is kind of inconsistent with portable gameplay, and holding it like this.
Books are totally portable.
Angling it like that to make sure you nail that spot just right, and then spinning around, presumably on a bus, trying to find ghost stuff. Yeah, there's a problem with that game, its portability. But they've done this before. I mean, they've had handheld games in the past that are quite not handheld friendly.
Well, like the original Game Boy couldn't, like, you had to have the power of the sun, you know, to see what you were doing. Kirby tilt and tumble.
It's portable, assuming you're outside and it's daylight and there's no clouds in the sky. Good shape.
I think the cool thing about 3DS is that it supports so many different kinds of games. I mean, and I think the fact that, you know, you've got eShop stuff that lives on your system. You don't have to carry around other cards and stuff like that. So even if I don't take a case, if I just take my system like this, I've got 10 or 12, with Ambassador stuff, I've got about 40 games that I can play at any given time. So just because I have one game that's not as portable doesn't mean that I don't have anything to play on it. So what we're kind of getting into the era where your system is like its own library, right? And so at any given time, you have a lot of different choices about what you can play based on your situation. So if I'm on the train, I might want to play one theme because it's loud and I can't hear, you know, so I might want to play a game where I don't care as much about the music, but if I'm at home and it's quieter, I might play something different. So you really have a lot of choices, and it's not so restricted by, you know, what you can carry with you anymore. I think that's it's great. It's very freeing for me. And it also encourages me to play a wider variety of games at any given time. So it's not like I have the one game in there that I'm going to play for the next 3 weeks and play nothing else, and I swap that out and I play something else. So the fact that certain games are not as portable, arguably, it's not as big of a deal, I think.
Yeah, I mean, as portables become more powerful, I mean, they kind of lend themselves more to that console type experience. In other words, you can have types of games, like you said, that you can take on the road with you, and then you have other games where you might prefer to kind of sit on your couch and play them rather than, you know, walk around and play.
I would say the distinction, though, is you need to make sure you still have those games available, that you're selling those games that are intrinsically portable experiences. And as long as you stay committed to that, then you're fine. And I would say they're actually in somewhat of a good shape there, because they have things on the eShop now, and they they're putting out, I don't know, one or two eShop games a week that are consistently decent. Decent, that's not a high bar, but
there are some awesome eShop games.
There are some good ones that are, you know, portable friendly. It to them that works out well because they can leverage developers to make things. While they focus on these larger projects, they can potentially franchise around.
Yeah, but I think it's a deliberate choice to release some games that aren't very portable feeling, either, you know, ergonomically that they're difficult to play in a portable sense, or maybe just the kind of game it feels like it's not. It feels more like a game that you would want to play at home, and that has a lot to do with the Japanese market where people don't play console games very much anymore, so they play their portables at home as well. Americans may or may not do that. So I think they're kind of, they want to serve both markets, and you know, I think it's okay, yeah.
One quick question, James, what happened to your mind?
I fell. I fell down. It hurt.
He's got
a slight concussion. We're fine.
What's up, guys?
Hey,
how's it going? I've been listening for about a year.
Awesome.
Never been able to play in your second. Anyway, with the Wii U coming out, hopefully this year, that what they say. With the footage and maybe hands-on time you guys got with Zelda, do you feel like it's too soon for a new Zelda to come out? For the system, considering Skyward Sword is really the first one for the Wii, because Twilight Princess was a port. And also, do you think it needs to look like the video that they showed off, or do you think if they go for a more cel-shaded Wind Waker type thing, it might kind of be not good for what they're trying to do, like the core gamer?
You know, history shows that you shouldn't put too much stock into the videos of Zelda that Nintendo shows. And that really was just a video that they showed you yep. last year. Was, yep. You could move the camera around.
And you can change day and night.
Yeah. So what, it wasn't really playable. They wanted to make it clear it was running in real time. That was the reason for that demo to exist. I think if they could have a new Zelda at launch that was a lot different than Skyward Sword, in whatever way you want to imagine, that would probably be a good thing. But just realistically, it's not going to happen. It's just not possible that they could have made a new Zelda game that would meet our expectations in that amount of time. Skyward Sword was a huge project, probably the most expensive game Nintendo's ever made, and it didn't do that well in the market. I think it did okay, but it didn't meet their lofty expectations for sales and things like that. So I think they're probably taking yet another long, hard look at Zelda and figuring out how do we manage this franchise in the future and make it viable for the fans.
Yeah, I also don't think that would be the franchise that they would actually use to court hardcore gamers anyway. I think it's kind of looked at as a broad appeal franchise, you know, kind of like a classic franchise. They would probably do something completely different if they're going in that direction.
So bro-fisting yourself would make better?
Yes, yes, they would form a bro-fist team. There would be many chest bumps.
But what if fanboy dreams do come true and Retro is working on the Zelda game?
That's not my fanboy dream. That's my fanboy nightmare.
I'd be okay with that.
I'd be totally fine with it. I think they will return to the graphical style, I really do, and I think in HD and with the new power of the system, it could look pretty amazing. And I think Wind Waker is a game that a lot of people, in retrospect, appreciate much more than they did at the time, and especially before it came out. I think with a refreshed push for that series and for that style, I think probably people are a lot more open to it now. If you look at games like Journey and there's a lot of examples on other systems that have adopted elements of the style of Wind Waker, and so it's now kind of more infused throughout the culture of gaming, and I think it's probably a lot easier for them to go back to that style now and have it look not so weird anymore, you know. So, yeah, I think that'll happen eventually.
Cool, thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey guys, long time listener, a few years.
Awesome.
Can I say that you look totally different from my mental image? Just wanting to know your voice.
Wait till you see the shirt.
So anyway, my question, the sales numbers from Japan this week where the 3DS is outselling the Vita 10-1, do you think we're going to see canceled 3DS games like Assassin's Creed Lost Legacy, Mega Man Legends 3, Saints Row, kind of be revived, at least the Japanese ones? And beyond that, do you think this year because of that, we're going to see further Western developers kind of embrace the 3DS, or mostly Eastern so far?
Great question.
I would say most games that canceled are are canceled for more than just concerns about the 3DS's viability on the platform. I think more often these titles were canceled out of concerns of viability of the game itself. Legends 3 is a really good example because apparently their objective was more with their paid demo was basically to like, hey, can we actually afford to make this game? And the answer is no. Assassin's Creed, I'm not really sure that how committed they were to that game. You know, if it was just, we have to have a game on 3DS, let's make one. Or if it was like somebody had a real vision. But at the same time, I think it will lead people to make more games for the 3DS. We would be turning down the market at that point. That's proven to be somewhat, at least have some depth to it.
Yeah. And one Western developed 3DS game that everybody should keep their eye on is Heroes of Ruin. That was one of my favorite 3DS games from E3 last year, and John played it yesterday at Square Enix.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. It was kind of a Diablo-ish experience, but I mean, they're going to have 4-player online, voice over IP, a whole bunch of stuff, and you know, a lot of really cool streamlining of the UI, so it's actually, it was pretty good. I was pretty impressed.
Square Enix booth, right?
Yeah. Yes, it is on the floor, and then you can voice chat with people even if you're not friends with them.
Yep.
Hard to believe.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
So that's pretty exciting, doing some cool stuff with Street Pass. I don't know if anybody was at the previous panel, but they talked about that a little bit. I'm really excited about that, but it's kind of out in the desert by itself. There's not a lot of really cool stuff announced from Western developers. I think E3, this will be the year where you'll start to see that onslaught, and it was kind of the same way with DS even. I mean, I remember 2005, first E3 after DS came out, still not very much at all from third parties. Nintendo had a lot of stuff, and that's where we started to get really excited about DS after a pretty slow, awful launch period.
Yeah, Pink Pals, I saw that. Sure. It's,
for sure. Yeah. But 2006, DS was just, I mean, like, it was everywhere. Just owned every single publisher at E3 had DS games.
Yeah, I think you're going to see that the 3DS is getting big, and there's kind of a groundswell with it now that it's going to become too big to ignore. I think that Vita, it's having problems definitely in Japan, especially when you know Monster Hunter 4 comes out. The Vita's going to be, it's going to have some problems.
Yeah. It's going to do the same thing 3DS did and PSP did, where it needs to find a market at this point. Right now, I mean, you look at its launch lineup. I'm not sure there's anything out there that says you have to buy the system right now. I mean, keep in mind in Japan they have a Monster Hunter game on 3DS and I have Street Pass with 3 people from Japan since I've been here, and they were all playing Monster Hunter 3.
Yeah.
So you can treat that as sort of, Monster
Hunter's not going to work in the West. It's just not. And I don't think Capcom has enough reason to totally redesign it just so Americans like it. So they're not going to. They would upset their Japanese fan base too much. But then the question is, what is the big thing for the West? I mean, what is the killer app that will just make it crazy in here? I don't know what that is yet, but I think it's coming. I really do.
Thank you, Herman.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I've got a pretty daring question here. It is pretty common opinion, at least from what I've seen, that Capcom in recent years has not been giving the attention to the Mega Man franchise and the character itself that fans think is deserved. You know, with his exclusion from the latest Marvel vs. Capcom and the cancellation of Legends 3, which may not have been a great game anyway, but what do you think about Nintendo potentially obtain the IP to the franchise?
I can't imagine Capcom would ever sell it.
Yeah,
even if they have no intention of using it. I mean, it's sort of so tied into their DNA at this point that they would be really reticent to do anything with it. Now,
he'll be in Smash Brothers. he will be. Mega Man's been on every platform over the past 25 years, but his home is Nintendo. He started on the Famicom and the NES and was, you know, Mega Man X and Mega Man 1 through 7 are all NES games. And even when, and I think we should give Capcom some credit because I think Mega Man 9 and 10 were really, really cool projects that are maybe a little bit underappreciated. You know, I think what they did with those games was excellent. And the success of those games, and for one thing, they're sold the best on WiiWare, which probably tells you a lot about where Mega Man fans live and what they're paying attention to. But the reason that they were able to make those games is that they were very cheap to make. And the problem is that Mega Man, because it has not changed in the past 25 years, and very incremental, tiny changes that only fans would notice, they haven't been able to go out and reach new fans. So they're catering to the same group of people every single time. And because of that, again, it's shrinking little by little over time. And so they can't make like a big budget Mega Man game. And that was the problem with Legends 3. It's a 3D game for a 3DS. And so it was going to cost way more to make than a 2D game. And
to an extent, they have to go through about 20 years of experimenting at some point. I mean, Mega Man 9 is essentially the same game you played, 26 years ago?
Yeah.
And, I mean, they can continue to make those games, like Tony said, or they're going to have to do something truly, I mean, like a jump we haven't seen before. And they can't just divorce like Nintendo with Kid Icarus and say, oh, whatever, I don't care what this game was out before, we're just going to make something different, it's fine. Because that franchise has continued to exist in the state that it's in.
Right.
So they have to somehow make, they either have to release a game knowing it's within a very small market, which they can, I mean, Capcom does have games like that, or they can, and knowing that means they get less resources, or they can try to make some big jump and know they have the potential of alienating everybody and spending a lot of money.
I think the most likely scenario for the revival of Mega Man is that Capcom will continue to publish it. I don't think that'll ever change unless they just go out of business and Nintendo picks up and buy or sell, you know, like what happened with Midway.
And Monster Hunter will prevent that.
Right, exactly. So that'll never happen. But Capcom could farm it out to an outside developer. They have shown that they're willing to do this with some of their other franchises. Mega Man, they've kept it fairly close to the vest. It's all been, they haven't let other studios develop them. They've been small Japanese developers that can keep on a short leash. And I think there's just, I think that, you know, as the franchise becomes more desperate and people, you know, becomes longer since the last game, they're going to be more willing to just let someone else take it and run with it. And I think a company like WayForward or Renegade Kid, I don't know if anyone's played Mutant Muds, but it's very Mega Man-esque. I think a company like that can do a great job with it, could make the game for very low development costs, and could put it out on platforms where the fans might actually pick it up. They could do that. Outside of that, it would need a pretty major overhaul, relaunch, and I'm not sure that it's worth their time to do, especially if they focus more on Western-style games as a publisher.
I think they just probably just wanted to give the franchise a break as well, because that character's been in some of the games.
Right.
There was a, I think it was 98, there was a year where if you didn't count Mega Man games, it was like 11 games with his name on it,
yeah,
which is a lot.
In a single year.
It's a lot of games. I mean, granted, it's across multiple platforms, but still that's a lot of things. So but maybe they, right now they're just sort of, like John said, just yeah, we'll let this sit for a little while.
And we'll figure or they out Guitar Hero it.
Yeah. So probably the reason that people are freaking out about the lack of Mega Man games is just that it has been such a steady stream over the entire lifetime of that franchise.
Yeah.
And you know, just because we go 2 or 3 years without a new Mega Man doesn't mean that we'll never see another one again. But you get used to seeing a new one every single year.
Yeah, I mean, if we didn't have a Call of Duty game announced next year, E3, what would... Oh. Are we done?
Someone's listening to the podcast while
we leave.
That's nice.
Yeah, if there wasn't a Call of Duty game announced next year, the internet would explode. And just out of shock more than anything else. But take that down many notches of scale, and that's kind of what I'm looking at.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
We only have a couple minutes left.
15 minutes?
Yeah. Oh, okay. We got
we have a couple 15 right. minutes left.
All right. Awesome, let's keep it going.
Hi.
Hi.
I've never listened to your show, but I'm going to now. I saw it in the
video. Awesome. Thank you.
Wrong, so, let's start this thing. I have a question about the Wii. You guys were mentioning before Ubisoft, and that was a great support. It's awesome. We need a special title. What do you think about the possibility of the other game beyond your control as a Wii U launch title? Because that game kind of disappeared. I really love the game. I know it didn't sell too well, but really liked it a lot. And then also, not just the launch title, but do you think it might be a new title exclusive? Because I feel like it could.
So the original game, Beyond Good and Evil, was first shown as a GameCube title. It was talked about as a GameCube title for a while. Eventually it was revealed it was multiple platform. It did sell best on the GameCube.
I think so.
Yeah, I think it did.
Which is a relative term because it sold horribly.
But it was a really good game. I did really enjoy that game. But
it's very Zelda-esque. If you've never played Beyond Good and Evil, you can actually download an HD version of it on Xbox and PS3, and it's fantastic. I would highly recommend you do. So if you've never played it, I mean, if you love Zelda, you should play it.
Does that point have problems? It seemed to...
No, it's really good.
Okay.
It's really good.
Then did we ever know what happened to the sequel?
Well, it was announced. I think it's one of those things
it's concept art.
It was a concept video. That game... Right, yeah. I mean, Rayman Origins just came out 6 months ago. There's no way that Beyond Good and Evil 2 is coming out for launch, unfortunately. But I think that game will eventually come out. It's probably going to be a long-term project for them. And it's a kind of game, if it's like the first game, it's a kind of game that in the modern era with the modern technology is very expensive to make. It's an adventure game, kind of epic in scale, a lot of wild characters and worlds, and it's just going to be, it's going to cost a lot of money to make. And based on the sales of the first one, it's a miracle that they're even talking about a sequel. So they're going to have to kind of take a creative approach to how they develop this. It'll probably just spool out over a very long period of time as they do.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. You'll probably see the hype train start really early for something like that. Just kind of probably just to gain, just to see the real interest.
Yeah,
like,
see what the
audience. They want to gauge whether people.
Now, we can go out on a limb now and say that if we ever do get the GameCube virtual console for the Wii U, that game will probably be on it. Because it's an easy sell for Ubisoft at that point. And sell it, I don't care.
There will definitely be a GameCube virtual console. It's
just a matter of when.
There's so much money to be made.
Yeah, well, there's definitely an N64 virtual console as well, but...
Yeah.
Fair enough. But I remember, I think Ocel himself said that... if Rayman Origins was successful enough, it would give him enough pull, perhaps, to do Beyond Good and Evil 2. Do we know if it's been successful enough? It made money, but I mean...
It broke even.
Oh, I love my PR reps.
It's not the John Carter of gaming, but it... let's just say it's not going to be funding the next game.
Yeah.
Good question, though. Thanks.
Yep. Also, we need to make more points out.
Yeah.
Nice.
Here. Question from Ness.
Well, you made the comment about how the Wii U is going to catch up to the current generation of Sony and the Microsoft consoles. If Wii U is not coming out till Christmas, and from what I've heard, they're looking at like 2015 something for the next generation of the Xbox PS3, what's preventing, or what's going to happen if Nintendo is always willing to catch up in that regard?
Yeah, it's a really good point. And the thing about Wii U is we're getting conflicting reports about how powerful it is. But I think it's totally reasonable to expect that it is as powerful and probably at least a little bit more powerful than the current generation of the other platforms. It's also coming out much later, much later, 5 years later than 360 and PS3, so that the components inside cost a lot less, which allows them to make a profit on it, which they always want to do with their systems. And it's going to let them, mass produce it, and it's going to let them push in other ways, like the controller, right? So they can spend more money on the controller and less money on putting like a really top-of-the-line graphics chip in.
Let's build a graphics processor.
Yeah. The interesting thing is, how does it compare to the next generation from the other guys, which we're not going to see this year at E3, it's going to be next year. That's going to be really interesting, because I think when you look at the very long time it took either Microsoft or Sony to ever make any money on their last system, I don't think they want to repeat that situation this time. And I think what you might see is the jump from the current Xbox and PlayStation to the next one is going to be smaller than it was the last time. So we might end up in a situation where, yes, Wii U is less powerful than the new systems from the other guys, but A, it costs a third of what those guys are charging, and B, it's not a huge difference.
It's not debilitating. You can't downplay to it.
And it's getting out earlier. So when I say they're playing, they're going to be catching up. What I mainly mean is now they're going to be, at least they can output in the same resolutions. They meet some of the same basic qualifications. But I do think, Wii U is going to be more powerful systems. I mean, it would be kind of kind of a travesty if it wasn't, right? It's coming out so much later, it's something that we don't know.
Right, yeah, they haven't said
anything. It will be a tremendous upgrade for the Wii. And that's probably what they're going to focus on in terms of marketing, in terms of messaging. It's not going to be a massive increase over what you see on the other systems right now, but it might be the case that developers just, you know, within a year or two, they're going to learn to squeeze more out of it because it is an architecture that they're already very familiar with, and they're really going to like that. They're going to like not having to totally retool everything that they do. But it's going to be interesting to see if, you know, maybe there's a lot of third-party support for the first year because it is now the newest hardware, and as soon as it's no longer the newest hardware on the block, everybody kind of moves on from that. That is a fear that I have, certainly, and I think it'll be interesting to see how they take on that challenge.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not too worried about it just because you're seeing current PC games being ported to Xbox 360, and they still look great, right? Xbox 360, at this point, I mean, that's hardware that's 5 years old, more than 5 years old.
Six.
And, you know, those games still look great, so I'm not really too worried about it.
Yeah. There's a potential for diminishing returns, just graphics period.
I mean, there have been, and I don't remember starting to run, there have been rumors regarding the next PlayStation's hardware specs and ridiculous resolution outputs it's capable of at the moment. And I'm not, like, we've seen...
Well, as a Nintendo person, I think you have to always look past the graphics portion.
Yes. So does Nintendo. So. But, I mean, we've heard other similar rumors regarding Wii U that make no sense. So, I mean, at this point, it's just, I would just advise everyone to just wait and see. Because I would guess 95% of what you hear is going to be wrong in some way. And good luck figuring out what the other 5% is. Because we can.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, thank you. Hello, gentlemen.
Hi.
Hello. My name is Remus. I'm a Razor Kid from NWR Forums, which I encourage anybody and everybody to join
nice.
Up.
Nice.
Go on to the 3DS friend codes if you haven't already. It's awesome seeing a lot of people from the forums on my 3DS. And I can't stand the 100 friend code limit. I can't bump up against that. But I'm married. I have two kids. So handheld gaming has become huge. With the 3DS, giving us both console-like experiences and handheld and the online storage being starting to get robust. Have you guys found that the handhelds have become a lot more part of your gaming regimen going forward within last year or so? That's about it.
Well, I mean, for me, it really, I just picked up a 3DS. I've been playing it a lot. It's new to me. But I think that the big thing for me is really not so much, you know, I mean, I'm married, so. But the big thing for me is if at some point I start to take the train to work, then I'm going to be playing this thing all the time. So right now I commute, but I'm probably going to be moving later this year, so we'll see. I'll be closer to work, so that's going to be the big thing. But yeah, I mean, certainly, I mean, the older you get, not that I'm over the hill or anything yet.
You're past the hill.
But, you know, the older you get, certainly, you know, having something you can carry around with you all the time, just, you know, kind of, you know, pull out whenever you need to, you know, need your gaming fix kind of thing. So it really helps. It really helps. So I think also the fact that I think that the experiences are getting better. I mean, the hardware is getting more powerful. So it's, you know, less of a kind of downgrade, if you want to call it a downgrade, of your gaming experience.
And in fact, on the Vita's current marketing strategy, that's what it's selling. It's basically telling you can literally take this game from your PS3 and then play it on Vita as you go on the train to work.
Yeah.
They have a marketing campaign that is explicitly that narrative.
That's weird to me.
It is somewhat weird.
It makes sense if you're the kind of person who only kind of fixates on one game at a time, which maybe is James, I don't know. But I have such diverse interests in gaming. I always want to be playing like 5 different games at the same time. And my appetite for games is just insatiable. So I'm quite fine having different games at home. You know, I have some games I put on my PC and some I play in front of my TV and some I play on my handheld. And I want that because it kind of gives me an excuse to play more games at the same time, all the time, right?
Yeah.
But I think the great thing about 3DS is, and I have been playing it a lot more than I played my DS, especially, and I'm carrying it around with me more. I think Street Pass is a huge part of that. I want to have it with me, so I always want to carry it with me. And I'm doing things on it that aren't even necessarily gaming all the time, you know, especially the Street Pass part, which I think you can have a weird argument about whether that's a game or not. But And just different kinds of games, you know, again, because it has games that live on it all the time. So I don't have to be tied down to the one that I happen to bring with me, you know,
on any given trip, I have so many options when I have my 3DS, and you didn't have that on the DS. Yeah. Maybe the DSi.
Street Pass is pretty much the killer app for me. I had no idea that it would be as big of a deal. With my DS, I would carry it around with me, but it wasn't really, I wasn't really conscious of it too much. But this is like, you know, every time I leave
John,
the house, I grab it with me.
How many got queued up right now?
What?
How many got queued up right now? 10? 10 in an offer? Clear it out.
Easily.
Go. Clear it.
Easily.
Let them get your totally lying name.
Yeah,
because me has hair.
It does. They don't quite have the buzz head. Not quite.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Hey guys, how's it going?
Great.
I actually had another question that someone took it, so I kind of thought, why? So my dad recently, he's about 57 something, a lot of Call of Duty, and he hadn't played a game probably in 10 years. And watching him play, I realized one reason he really liked this because it's actually pretty straightforward. It's very painful at first, him unable to use both analog sticks and kind of look up in the air, but over time he kind of got it. And I tried to get him to play other games, like he thought Mass Effect looked good, and Gears of War, but I think they were just too complicated for him. And now the next generation coming up and kind of hearing about Retro Studios hiring people from the Uncharted games and I think Enslaved. And while Nintendo's not exactly, you know, we know the demographic they cater to, still with development costs going to go up and those kind of games being very popular, do you think that, and also that they tend to have a very diverse lineup, you know, something from like Fire Emblem to Rhythm Heaven, do you think they would ever try to make any games that, while aren't, where they're kind of more, not exactly like Call of Duty, but kind of more simple and easy to get into for trying to touch upon that market that hasn't really been part of their portfolio at all?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. Call of Duty is weird because it's really complicated. In order to be good at it, it's really difficult to be good at Call of Duty, and yet it's a kind of thing that
objectively it's quite simple. Like what you're trying to do, you go forward through, but the actual mechanics of being good at it are incredibly intricate.
You only play as a single player, by the way.
Oh, only a single player. That's interesting, but it is very simple in a single player. But I think it the question gets at the heart of a problem Nintendo has pushing some of their most respected, most famous franchises. Games like Zelda and Metroid are incredibly complex to play. They require you to do all these wild things in your brain to get your head around how these levels are put together, and they're puzzle based, they're exploration based. It's very daunting for someone who's not already steeped in the culture of video games and has been doing that for their entire lives. And I think it's very difficult for them to adapt those franchises to be something that's more accessible. They've tried so hard with Zelda to make it a casual, friendly game, and it's not. I don't think it'll ever be. I really don't. I think the people who love Zelda don't want it to be. They love the complexity and the sophistication of what's in the game design for that franchise. So it's tough. They're going to have to do it with new franchises.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, they would have to take a broad approach where, the fighting genre, it got to a point where the games were so complicated to play that they became a niche genre. And then Nintendo came along with Brawl and completely just blew that out of the water. It's an amazing game, but it's also anybody can pick it up and play it and understand what's going on. So I think that's the kind of approach that they'll have to take that they took with Brawl. They'll have to just kind of throw everything out, say, just start with the base concept, like we want people to be able to fight each other, but it can't be in a way that's complicated and it'll scare them away, and go from there with first person shooters. I would love to see them do it. I don't know how they would do it, but I think they could.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Quick question, guys. Here's the theoretical. So, E3 2012, lights dim, you hear some familiar music, and you see simultaneous launch date for Grand Theft Auto V on PS3, 360, and Wii U. You think that's possible?
Yes, it's possible.
I think it's possible.
Yeah.
I
think it's going to happen.
Yeah. It might, but it's not as big of a deal as you might think. It has a shock value for people who wouldn't expect Grand Theft Auto to be on a Nintendo platform, even though it has been in the past. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, the system's already coming out on at least two or three other platforms, and having it come out with parity on Wii U means little, because no one's buying the Wii U to play Grand Theft Auto.
Because they already use them to play it. If we were dealing with a situation where nobody had systems, then it would be more pressing issue, but unless they came out and said, oh yeah, the Wii U version is awesome, and then had some real justification for that.
I mean, I remember when San Andreas was announced for an Xbox version, you know, it seemed like it was a big news story because that series had been sort of exclusive to PlayStation 2 for a while, but ultimately, does anybody really care that Grand Theft Auto was on Xbox, the original Xbox? It's not a big deal in the grand scheme of things because that's already a multi-platform series. So, you know, if there was a unique Grand Theft Auto that would only be on Wii U or something like that.
Chinatown Wars was unique.
It was at first, yeah. And Chinatown Wars is great.
It was, it was a great game.
And unfortunately, nobody knew how to sell that game to the
No, it was such a weird game because, I mean, it looks, the cartoon graphic style, okay, but it's actually really violent.
Yeah. So you think that at least I think maybe some media push from that though?
Yeah. It would get them some media push. Yeah. We would write about it, obviously, and pretty much all the way up the chain would write about it. But I'm not sure that it would move the needle any.
Yeah.
If the goal is to show that we will have mature rated games, I think they've kind of already done a lot of that. I mean, Metro 2033 is dire. That is like a grisly game.
Darksiders 2.
Darksiders 2, yeah. There's a lot of in-ring games already announced. Assassin's Creed 3.
Aliens.
So,
you think Ninja Gaiden 3 will be any better on the Wii?
I might be worse.
Let's just put it this way. They do at least have a chance to kind of
do something
fix it, right?
Yeah.
So there, I think there'll be some interest honed in that game on Wii U. It says maybe this is a chance for redemption.
Yeah, but I mean, I wouldn't pin it on one game. It has to.
Right,
he's got it.
If they had this big slate in this, and these are the mature rated games we're going to have, and that was on there with day and date, I think that might be more impactful than just saying, oh yeah, it's cool, we need to.
If GTA 5 comes out to Nintendo, I think that we can expect great coverage from Fox News.
Yes, exactly. Thanks,
guys.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, hello. Yeah.
This is the last question, by the way.
So how long after the Wii U's release do you think there's going to be a Nintendo DS player, kind of in the style of the Game Boy player for the GameCube?
Using the tablet as the touchscreen?
Pretty much, yeah.
Well, like, there is a... Nintendo is going to have to find peripherals to sell, because they're not going to be selling Wiimotes for the Wii U.
Well, it might be.
Guillaume is exactly right. The weird thing about the Wii U is as soon as a hardware-driven company, they make most of their money selling hardware and first-party software. And, you know, the Wii U, because it supports one tablet, and the tablet, by necessity, has to come with the system, and otherwise you're using controllers that you already own for Wii, it leaves them in a really weird spot. How are they going to make a lot of money on Wii U if they can't sell you crazy accessories? And I've been wondering about this a lot. I think there's potential they can sell like maybe a wireless classic controller that's a little bit better or something like that, but it's going to be difficult for them, for sure. But I don't think a Nintendo DS adapter is the way to go, because you have to remember the Game Boy Player and the Super Game Boy for that matter, those were supporting handheld systems that were concurrent with the console that the adapter supported. DS has been out since 2004. And
well, it would probably also play 3DS games.
But then you'd have to have a 3D TV and wear glasses, which Nintendo is very much against. It goes against their whole message for 3DS in the first place. So I think the chance for that has kind of passed them by. I think they probably could have done it for Wii if they'd released some kind of touchscreen adapter for Wii as a controller. But for Wii U, it seems like a perfect match, but then you think about the timing, and I don't think it works out anymore.
Also, I would point out that those games look really bad. They stretched out on the Wii screen.
The other part of the appeal for Super Game Boy and the Game Boy Player was that the handhelds at that time were not nearly as convenient. So for Game Boy, you had battery issues, they weren't in color, the screen wasn't all that clear back then.
Nope.
For Game Boy Player, I mean, it was released, you know, at the time when Game Boy Advance was a system that you had to play under a special kind of lamp in order to see the screen properly. So these were systems that there were games on these handhelds that people didn't necessarily want to play on the actual handheld, even though they were good games, and so there was a seen as a market to adapt these if you play on your console. I don't think that's the case anymore. I think people like the DS and the 3DS plenty, and so they don't necessarily want an outlet to play their portable games on the console anymore.
So probably you couldn't. So you're not really thinking that in the future people will be able to generally record DS Let's Plays or something?
Well, we deal with those two. I would imagine that there is hardware to available to do it. I mean, I know there's...
Yeah, there's capture units that some members of the press get.
But I don't know that Nintendo's going to make those available to anybody.
Okay, thanks for the question. Thank you. All right, so we're going to have to close the panel. Before we go, I did want to remind everybody, if this is your first time listening, I hope you'll subscribe to the podcast. We do this in even longer form every week, and it's a really fun show, so I hope you will check it out. I want to thank our fans, everybody here who's done some support for the show and helped make it possible. I really appreciate that. Our friend Jeff Callis, who works at Penny Arcade and has supported this panel for the past 3 years, and of course the enforcers who make it all happen behind the scenes. Really appreciate that, guys. Thanks a lot. We'll probably hang outside if you want to come talk. If you did get your question, we'll be happy to do so then. Thanks for coming.